I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, here is an episode from our 10 episode playlist that we're calling Offbeat History.
Yeah, we're adding this to our regular publishing schedule as one kind of big drop all at the same time on March 19th, and that is so that you maybe have a little bit of extra entertainment options available to you, particularly if you are self-quarantined or sheltering in place.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today is the second part of our two-part episode on a series that ran in the New York Sun in August of 1835, detailing some incredible and amazing discoveries that have been made by viewing the lunar surface through a brand new type of telescope created by Sir John Herschel. It had discussed at some length bison that had been seen, flora, goat-like unicorns, and in the last chunk that we talked about before we cliffhung the first episode, bat people.
Right. And also the bipedal beavers with no tails that carried their babies around like human babies.
Yeah, I was telling our producer, Noel, that I want to start a band called Lunar Beavers because that's funny to me. I don't have any musical talent, but I'm going to do it just the same. I figure I can at least make band t-shirts, right?
I think that's a great idea.
So now we're going to pick up with the fifth entry in this six-part series, and we will go on to describe it and the sixth part. And what they contain. And then we will talk about sort of the cultural context of all of this and how it affected people.
The fifth entry in this series appeared in the newspaper on Saturday, August 29th, 1835. And this one started with the description of three oceans on the surface of the moon, which were visible even with the puniest of telescopes. They had also described seven seas and innumerable smaller bodies of water. Additionally, there were all manner of outcroppings that the astronomers really started to struggle to name because there's not really a comparable geography on Earth.
And while they were surveying all of these lunar attributes, and again, this is after they had just, this is the following session after they had discovered these bat people,
The astronomers identified an unusual architectural figure in the landscape. So they paused for a moment and they adjusted their instruments, lenses, and its settings so that they could take a closer look at it.
What they discovered was a triangle-shaped temple that was made entirely of sapphire or some other blue stone that closely resembled sapphire. The temple had numerous massive columns around its outside edges that were estimated to be 6 feet or 1.8 meters wide and 70 feet or 21 meters tall. These columns were spaced at about 12 feet or 3.7 meters apart.
Yeah, and when we say triangle-shaped, what we mean is the footprint of it was triangle-shaped. It wasn't a pyramid. It was kind of like if you were looking at it from above, it was a triangle, but it rose like a column in the sum of its parts. And it was, according to Dr. Andrew Grant, who you will recall if you listen to the first part, was the assistant to Sir John Herschel, who was relaying this information to an Edinburgh scientific journal and sharing these notes with the press. And he said that this was quite a beautiful structure. The roof was a golden metal, and it appeared to mimic the look of flames. And within the flames, as though it was being consumed by them, was a sphere that the astronomers observed that looked as though it were made of a clouded copper. And on each of the temple's three corners was a smaller sphere of what appeared to be the same copper material.
A scroll made from the same metal as the flames unfurled from the roof over the upper walls of the building. And the temple was open and airy. There weren't really any additional walls or altars that existed in addition to all these columns. With the inclusion of the flame ornamentation on the top, they estimated that it was almost 100 feet or 30 meters high. There were no man-bats or other humanoid moon beings at the temple, only birds.
And this fifth entry pretty much just describes this temple, and then it concludes with speculation about the meaning of the temple and its flame symbolism. It asks the question, quote, did they, by this, record any past calamity of their world or predict any future one of ours?
The sixth and final entry in the New York Sun's lunar series was printed on Monday, August 31st, 1835.
Yeah, so that at this point, they've run basically for a week. Not far from the temple discussed in the fifth entry, which they referred to as the Veil of the Triads, the astronomers saw similar beings to their man-bats that they had talked about in the fourth entry, which they had named Vespertilio Homo.
These creatures, however, were a lot larger, and they were lighter colored than the ones that they had seen in the Ruby Colosseum. Dr. Grant claimed that these man-bats were, quote, an improved variety of the race.
The team observed these larger man-bats eating yellow, gourd-like fruits and then sucking the juice from a red fruit that was sort of shaped like a cucumber. The astronomers observed these creatures and their group dynamics, and they noted how polite they seemed to be in terms of their society and their seeming serenity overall.
They also observed 8 or 9 previously unseen quadruped species, including a really elegant stag-like beast that had a white coat and black antlers. Grant commented on the way that all of the beings of the moon seemed to cohabitate peacefully without any sort of predator-prey kind of relationship, which kind of contradicts the earlier accounts where they decided that there must be fish in the water because the birds were diving for them.
Yeah, that's not brought up again at all. And at this point, they sort of, it's a shorter observational period. They kind of conclude the day's observation. However, this is not the end of this sixth entry in the newspaper series.
After gawking at all of this amazing stuff and the more advanced man-bats of the moon, the astronomers wrapped up for the night by accidentally failing to correctly lower the lens and place it horizontally. They lowered it, but they left it in a perpendicular position. And consequently, the observatory that Herschel and his team had constructed caught fire because of the light that continued to reflect in the telescope because it hadn't been laid down flat. So while the structure and its contents were safe, there was a massive hole that had been burned in the reflecting chamber of the observatory. And that's why everything was abruptly cut short.
Of course, workmen were hired. for a rush repair job, according to this account by Grant. And within a week, the telescope and its supporting elements were once again fit to do their work. But unfortunately, at that point, the moon had moved out of observable position and it wouldn't come back again for a bit.
What follows is a whole section where the telescope was then turned to Saturn and its rings, and the account detailed various things about that celestial body rather than the moon.
Which is all a very fascinating read, but we're going to keep focused to the moon stuff for this. And by the time the moon had moved back into an observable position, Grant's notes indicated that Herschel was still really deep in his Saturn studies, so that he couldn't quite refocus back to the moon yet. But Dr. Grant and the other two assistants that were there did decide to take another peek at the moon. And at this point, the three found an even more beautiful group of Vespertilio Homo, which seemed to have a ceremonial social structure, which was similar to what they had seen among the bat people near the Sapphire Temple, and an even more advanced proclivity for producing art.
But that's where the account of Dr. Grant ends. He said he wished to, quote, let the first detailed account of them appear in Dr. Herschel's authenticated natural history of this planet.
Which is so kind of him to not want to steal the spotlight. So we are going to talk next about how the world of 1835 felt about all of this moon talk and these amazing and fantastical discoveries. But before we do, we're going to pause for a word from a sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Okay, so back to the New York Sun's published accounts based on the notes of Dr. Grant of the things they had seen on the moon as part of Sir John Herschel's expedition. So this newspaper series featured a moon filled with lush landscapes of crystals and poppies, fauna similar to bison, unicorn, and sheep, and a relatively advanced race of bat people. So you are probably wondering, what on earth did the public make of all this?
And the short answer was, people were really excited. They debated over the veracity of these reports from the lunar surface. There were lectures given and open panels to discuss the implications of this new finding of life on the moon.
And other news outlets started picking up the story even before all of the installments had been published. So, like, by the second one, they began to reprint this. And within weeks, the tale of lunar civilization had really kind of traveled around the world as one outlet picked it up and shared it with another, et cetera, et cetera.
The Sun made a nice chunk of cash from this hoax. The readership numbers might have bumped up a little, but the paper also sold really popular pamphlets about the discoveries, prints of artist renderings of the various elements that had been described in the series, and that included the solar temple and the bat people.
Yeah, those images are fantastic. I love them. And in terms of context in the greater cultural landscape, a decade before the Great Moon hoax, a German professor at Munich University had published a paper that translates to discovery of many distinct traces of lunar inhabitants, especially of one of their colossal buildings. And this one was not intended as a hoax. It discusses the multicolored patches of the moon and how they might relate to gradations, how those gradations might relate to possible different climate zones, different crops, and perhaps even different cities and man-made structures.
Just a few months before the New York Sun ran this story, there was also an Edgar Allan Poe short story that came out called The Unparalleled Adventure of One Hans Fall, and that had been published in the Southern Literary Messenger. This was the story of a man's return to Holland, and he was filled with stories of a balloon adventure that had taken him to the moon. This had been intended, as was the case for satire at the time, to fool at least some of its readers, but Poe's story was quickly recognized as fiction by typical readers most of the time. Further, the Southern Literary Messenger had a really small circulation, whereas the New York Sun had a much larger readership.
Yeah, some of the numbers that you'll see were like in the 19,000s for distribution. There is some debate about what the true numbers were and how much of that was a bump from this story, but thousands versus a much smaller group that were reading the Southern Literary Messenger. And whether the Hans Fall tale inspired this lengthy faux scientific series of notes that the Sun published, we don't know for certain. It's certainly entirely possible that both were developed independently. But this was a time when an expedition like Herschel's trip to South Africa, which was a real thing, to observe Halley's Comet was big news. And astronomy and the possibility of life on other worlds were really sparking the imaginations of the general public. And in fact, 40 years earlier, Sir John Herschel's father, William Herschel, had published a paper speculating about life on other planets. So this was a topic that was kind of rumbling through culture already.
The Sun's series had been really carefully designed to capitalize on all that interest in space and life on other worlds and all of that. It was grounded in truth thanks to the use of Herschel's name and his very well-reported research trip to Cape Town. It developed slowly, first establishing all of the scientific instruments that were being used in the research, and then it unwound the details of these lunar wonders bit by bit.
And while you will hear and read, if you look at many historians' treatment of this, different accounts of really how this kind of came out in terms of numbers of like what proportion of the population believed it versus what didn't, at least for the first several installments, it seemed that a lot of people did believe these claims, or were at least sort of wanted to believe them enough to think about them, of flora and fauna that were being observed with this amazing fictional telescope. But the fourth installment, so that's where they introduced these bat people, went a little too far past believability for a lot of readers. That kind of tipped the scale of like, you've gone too far now.
By the time the fifth entry was published, most of the other papers had started denouncing the entirety of this series as a hoax. Richard Adams Locke, a British journalist who had moved to America, was accused of penning the faux discovery narrative. Locke had been hired as an editor of The Sun just 2 months before this hoax began.
And Locke actually addressed these accusations with a nebulous denial letter that he wrote to the New York Herald on August 31st. So that was the same day that the last installment of the tale was published in the New York Sun. And in this letter, Locke wrote, quote, "I beg to state, as unequivocally as the words can express it, that I did not make those discoveries, and it is my sincere conviction, founded on a careful examination of the internal evidence of the work in which they first appeared, that, if made at all, they were made by the great astronomer to whom all Europe, if not an incredulous America, will undoubtedly ascribe them."
A Philadelphia paper reprinted Locke's letter along with an advertisement for real estate auction to sell off newly discovered property identified by Sir John Herschel, the sale of which could include the native one-horned sheep with the fleshy lid flaps, if the buyer so desired.
Yeah, so some people were definitely kind of picking up the joke and running with it in their own ways. And even though at this point it clearly seemed to all be one big lark and most people had accepted it as such, there were still people who believed the accounts. Plus, there was this added complication. Remember, we're talking about 180 years ago, that in some places the news of the discovery had spread, but the follow-up hoax discussions had not. So they were only getting the accounts as though they were real. They had not had any of the follow-up talk that was going on in other papers.
Of course, there was no Dr. Andrew Grant who had been traveling and working with Sir John Herschel. He was completely made up. But Herschel did exist, and he had been working on a new telescope, and he did travel to the Cape of Good Hope in 1834. It was on that trip that he made some important observations of Halley's Comet. So that little tiny kernel of truth fueled the fires of belief as this whole hoax played out.
And Edgar Allan Poe believed that Locke was the author of the Great Moon Hoax, as the serial came to be known. It certainly wasn't published that way, but later on people started calling it that. And he suggested that Locke had actually stolen the Hans Fall idea and reworked it. And after almost 10 years of complaining about this, as though it had been a slight to him, Poe wrote another story which was entitled The Balloon Hoax. And this was about an intensely speedy balloon trip across the Atlantic Ocean. If I'm remembering correctly, it like took 75 hours. And this too was a hoax, apparently inspired by the Great Moon Hoax, and it ended up being published in the New York Sun. The balloon hoax fooled a lot more people than the story of Hans Fall.
So, the New York Sun never retracted this story. It also never named the true author, although most historians do believe that it was Locke. And we'll talk about that more in a moment. While most people and other news publications seemed unbothered by this, The Sun's primary competitor, the New York Herald, declared the Sun's printing of the series to be, quote, highly improper, wicked, and in fact, a species of impudent swindling. But most people saw it as basically a clever joke.
The reason that most people were willing to let this hoax go without protests about the Sun's journalistic integrity and the ethics that they should have upheld sort of stemmed from the fact that the New York Sun was a penny paper. At the time, there were penny papers and there were 6-cent papers. And 6-cent papers at the time were aimed at more discerning readers, usually a little more educated, a little more highbrow, whereas penny papers printed more lurid news. They would print gossip, they would print crime reports and murder sheets, and they were aimed at sort of a wider audience. They just weren't considered on the same level as the 6-cent papers.
I think this is similar to the divide between the tabloid format papers and broadsheet papers today.
It is, although penny papers would report real news as well, but yeah, they had sort of that leverage to have a little bit of wit and not...
Yeah, and tabloids have definitely broken some legitimate stories before.
That's true.
But, the classic Bat Boy cover of a tabloid paper is what this whole story kind of reminds me of.
And who doesn't love Bat Boy? We're going to talk a little bit more about Locke and about Sir John Herschel in just a moment. But before that, we are going to have a quick word from a sponsor, if that's cool with Tracy.
Sure.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary
revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/Papertarian.
So, almost 5 years after the Great Moon Hoax was published, and after Locke, who was noted to be kind of a heavy drinker, was said to have confessed his authorship to various colleagues in the newspaper industry in various states of intoxication, Locke actually wrote a letter to the paper New World. And at this point, he had returned to life as a freelance writer. After he left The Sun, he went to another job at the New Era, but then when he resigned from that, he went back to freelance.
Locke's letter appeared on the front page of the New World on May 16th of 1840, and in it, he said that he had written the Great Moon Hoax, but that it had not been intended as a hoax. He claimed that it had been written as satire, intended to skewer the effect that religion was having on science, which he believed led to the acceptance of fanciful thinking over solid truth.
And so that would seem to clear the case on whether or not Locke had written it. However, there is still some debate over whether he could have even written this series, given the information about astronomy that it contained, and that some people say he just would not have known. It is, of course, entirely possible that Locke could have consulted with experts or that multiple writers worked on these accounts that they put forward as the work of this fictional Dr. Andrew Grant. And it's also entirely conceivable that Locke may have learned enough about astronomy through his own reading. He was apparently a very well-read man and sort of a lifelong learner, that he could have written this piece without assistance. So it's not an open and shut, but most people still think Locke did do the writing.
You may be wondering, I know I was, exactly what Sir John Herschel thought of all of this. And while all of this work was going down in the States, Sir John Herschel was still in South Africa doing actual legitimate astronomy work. In late 1835, he was given a copy of the narrative that The Sun had published, which had cited his work, and his initial reaction seemed to be one of amusement. He's said to have remarked that his own actual work would probably seem quite dull by comparison once it was published.
So even though the initial reception on his part was pretty jolly, over time, that amusement wore right off. Several years down the road, he wrote a letter to his aunt Caroline Herschel, who was also an astronomer of some renown. "I have been pestered from all quarters with that ridiculous hoax about the moon, in English, French, Italian, and German.
As for the sun, it continued its circulation until it merged with the New York World Telegram in 1950, and that company eventually went under in 1967.
And that's the Great Moon Hoax, which I think I did not credit earlier, but our listener Brian wrote to us and mentioned this a while back, and it kind of went on my list, and I've been eyeballing it ever since. So I'm glad that this was the week that I carved out time to do it.
Yeah, I was actually out of the office while you were working on this, and you had emailed me and said that we were going to talk about the moon hoax, and I was immediately really excited because I love that episode of the Memory Palace that you mentioned at the top of the episode. If you don't listen to the Memory Palace, it is quite different from what we do. They are very short episodes. They usually have some music that goes along with them in the background, and it's more like a brief story about something that happened in history. I find them to be very lovely and charming, and the one on this is particularly lovely and charming.
Yeah, I like to think of it as like history as art.
Oh yeah,
podcast.
Yeah,
they're it's really really delightfully done. I like it heaps.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this classic. If you have heard any kind of email address or maybe a Facebook URL during the course of the episode, that might be obsolete. It might be doubly obsolete because we have changed our email address again. You can now reach us at historypodcast@iheartradio.com, and we're all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.